I can still remember the first time I read a book with a fictional character like me. Not that Carter Kane was necessarily like me in his sense of humor, in how he lived his life, or in how many ancient Egyptian gods he fought. He was like me in that he too had a black father and a white mother. I know it sounds like a small thing. I mean, how much can a small detail about a character's skin color or birth really affect someone? In science fiction and fantasy, sure, you can find people who are mixed race. However, you're more likely to have that character's parentage mentioned if it involves them being half Vulcan or half elf. And maybe I was reading the wrong books. Maybe I was a dumb kid. But in my freshman year of high school, as I read the first chapter of Rick Riordan's Red Pyramid, I realized for the first time that there were fantasy characters who could be like me. Not in terms of personality or age or thoughts, though I was happily similar to Carter Kane in those fields, but in terms of actual racial background. Here's a sample from the first chapter of the book, describing Carter's relationship with his sister.
You would never guess she's my sister. First of all, she'd been living in England so long, she has a British accent. Second, she takes after her mom, who was white, so Sadie's skin is much lighter than mine.
And another segment from Chapter 6 where Carter's talking about traveling with his father.
I remember the first time he explained it to me. I was 10. We were on our way to the airport in Athens, and it was like 112 degrees outside. And I was complaining that I wanted to wear shorts and a t-shirt. Why couldn't I be comfortable? We weren't going anywhere important that day, just traveling. My dad put his hand on my shoulder. Carter, you're getting older. You're an African-American man. People will judge you more harshly, and so you must always look impeccable.
I remember my father telling me the same sorts of things. Small ways of trying to distinguish myself positively in society. And while me and my sister don't look as different as Carter and Sadie, her skin is a little lighter than mine, and people who've met us both don't really assume we're related. And that's what I want to talk about on here. How having a part of you be acknowledged by the media or people around you can be empowering, specifically in terms of being mixed, but even beyond that. Right now, in America, there are roughly 9 million people who identify as multiracial, which is something you actually weren't able to do on the US Census until the year 2000. Prior to that, you had to pick one race and stick with it. When I first started looking into doing this project, I was really excited about that new freedom. I flashed back to grade school, getting standardized tests where we had to fill in bubbles indicating our race and being told to pick just one, and not being sure which to pick.
That was actually a good mic test for me.
I talked to Stacey Moultrie. She's going for her PhD at the University of Iowa and researches work produced by mixed-race authors, playwrights, etc. She herself is mixed and has spent her time looking into the critical aspects and sociological implications of being multiracial, which is a fairly new area of study.
Are you, like, from a personal perspective or the field itself?
The field itself. There were people like Rainier Spencer,
right,
who wrote that article that I sent you, and a few other folks were, you know, trying to add the critical aspect. And what I mean by critical is... Mm-hmm. Relating these issues of like multiracial identity to power structures, like systems of oppression and injustice, rather than just like a mere celebration of, hey, we are mixed people in the world.
Right, yeah.
Like it's a brand new thing and just leaving it as that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were more interested in being like, okay, so what does this mean for like social justice?
Right, yeah.
What does this mean for, you know, white hegemony or white oppression?
And while she's obviously in favor of people identifying as mixed race, she's not entirely certain that the U.S. Census is necessarily the best place for that kind of expression.
I think there's a number of different messages in society that, you know, tell you to be authentic or to express yourself. And, you know, for folks who have found their racial identity to be problematic or something that has not been, you know, easy to pin down or easy to explain, or if they've just had a range of difficulties surrounding their racial identities, it could...
Right.
Yeah. I mean, to say, like, oh, mixed race, leave it at that. Like, that's really easy.
Right.
And, you know, it can be powerful to assert that kind of, to express yourself in that way. Okay. And to assert an identity that way.
Right.
I'm a proponent of, like, there's a difference between, like, mm-hmm. expressing yourself socially, like, among friends or to your family or to the community mm-hmm. and, you know, putting it on form.
Right, yeah.
That's just me, though.
Part of her rationale comes from the article Think Twice, Check Once, a Huffington Post piece from Michelle Elam. The article is a brief look at the effect of being able to check multiple races in the census and how it hurt affirmative action in a Washington community.
Well, like, through research and mm-hmm. reading, it's become apparent that maybe the census isn't the best place to have that kind of self-expression. Like, the mm-hmm. census has, like, very material effects on communities.
Yeah.
But in 2010, I believe, mm-hmm. Michelle Elam, who mm-hmm. Wrote this book called The Souls of Mixed Folk.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. a good one, too. Mm-hmm. But she wrote this Huffington Post piece that's still up on the internet somewhere. That was like, you know, she made a really good argument as to why the census, you know, was not created to mm-hmm. be a place for self-expression like that.
Right.
Like, you know, depending on, you know, where people live and the racial and gender demographics of all these places, you know, certain funds are allocated for certain programs. And so at the time that she was writing that article, mm-hmm. Or was it 10 years before with the first census, one of the two, but she was living in Tacoma, Washington, mm-hmm. and there was this district near her that was supposed to be zoned as like an empowerment zone, so it was supposed to like help build like black business or minority owned businesses mm-hmm. and up in like, you know, rural Washington, like Washington State, uh-huh. you know, it was pretty cool. But then the census came back mm-hmm. and a lot of people, you know, started marking more than just one race.
Yeah.
And they were like, I guess there weren't as many minorities as we thought. So let's take away the funds for this empowerment zone. And so that zone disappeared.
Okay.
Because there was no longer the statistics to...
Right.
Yeah.
So it was because fewer people were...
Basically, the people who might have been half black business owners in these empowerment zones were told they weren't black enough and stopped receiving aid from the government, which on the one hand is outrageous. You don't look white, so you don't get any of the social benefits that often come with being white, and now you're being denied aid for your business. But then there's the other side of it. Let's say you should unquestionably be getting aid in an instance like this if you're half black and half white. So then, should you still be getting it if you're 1/4 black? How about 1/8? What if your parent who identifies as black is in fact 1/4 white? Where do you draw the line?
I personally have issues with, like, mm-hmm. quantifying...
Right.
Race?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, the idea of buy or try. Right. Like, yeah, all of that, like, I'm like, Like, that doesn't make too much sense to me. That's why I tend to lean towards terms like multiracial or mixed race.
Okay, right.
Because it's just implying, like, shit happened.
Right, yeah.
Like, shit's there.
Right.
So, yeah, there's no easy solution for quantifying race. But even then, on a personal level, it can be empowering to have a racial identity, and it can be a relief to find someone who you can identify with, represented in the media you're exposed to.
Ever since I got into college, I'm a freshman, so, like, it's a new thing to me. I'm really proud of being, like, a biracial person.
Take Miriam Harula. Her mother is Samoan, her father is white. Her mother met her father while he was visiting her island. They married after 6 months, and she moved with him to Wisconsin and went 16 years without going back to her birthplace.
And we don't make that much money, so we tried very, very hard to try to get her to go to Samoa, to go to New Zealand, to go to Australia, but it didn't happen until very recently. And she started to lose the language, which is horrible because the language is already dying out, and it makes me cry like so much because I want my culture to live on, and there's so much culture in the language.
During the 16 years her mother didn't go back, she gave birth to Miriam, half white and half Samoan. As you might have guessed, people don't necessarily assume those are Miriam's origins when they look at her. People usually assume she's Mexican or just categorize her as white. She did a spoken word piece at her college about it her freshman year.
I really delved into that, saying that, well, you look at me and you just assume it, but it's not, and that makes me feel like you don't even give a shit.
Right, yeah.
I think my favorite story about being misraced was during work one time. This person's like, I was like, I don't like Taco Bell. And they're like, but that's the food of your people. And I'm like, it's not the food of my people because I'm not Latino, I'm not Mexican, I'm not any kind of Latinx, I'm not part of the Latinx community.
It went so far that when she did try to express the Samoan part of herself, people would get a little touchy. Like, at what was there a time where you felt like it started to annoy you?
I feel when I was probably, I was in third grade, mm-hmm. and my mom was like, you should put on a show. There was a talent show, and I did a traditional Samoan dance.
Oh, okay.
And from that point on, I felt like I want people to know me as an islander. I don't want them to know me as just like a colored brown person, even though I am a brown mm-hmm. person. It's just, it's my identity, and that's how I identify myself. And you don't get to identify me however you want, because that's my job, because that's who I am.
Right.
And I've been fighting back and forth, being, obviously, I'm half white and half Samoan, so that makes me, like, question myself a lot, because in high school, people put me in a white person box.
Right.
And I could never express myself as a Samoan person, but I could only do it to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
If I ever did something that was, like, white person-esque, I'd be like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And then once I did something that was, like, even mildly, like, Islander, they're like, you need to, like, back off a little bit. And I'm like, why? This is who I
right.
am. I'm not just, like, a plain white person like you. You have culture, but you just see yourself as an American, and you don't have, like, deep roots. And your culture isn't, like, dying out. Your language isn't dying out. Like,
right.
You can go about your life, and I have to have this constantly on my back, breathing down my neck.
I didn't necessarily speak to a lot of people for this project, but for everyone I did speak to, that fear seemed to be a reoccurring thing for everyone. People being afraid that part of their heritage was being eroded, taken away.
It would sort of be like pretending like half of me didn't exist, and all of the people that I'm related to, I'm not related to. It would be like denying all of these memories that I have of my father in pictures.
Yeah.
It'd be like saying that didn't matter to me.
Half of me doesn't really exist, I suppose. Like, it's only really ever the white part that ever gets anything, any attention or anything. The Hispanic part of me, if it exists, doesn't.
I don't know. I don't know. Whenever I've asked my friends, they're like, "Oh, well, you're not really black." Like, even though it's like, well, it's just kind of like, well, yeah, I am. Like, what? Just because I'm biracial, does that not qualify me to be black still? Like, I don't know.
What I see it as is, they really didn't view me as anything. Like, I wasn't one of them. Like, they knew I was, like, different, but not, like, they obviously did not see me as being black because of my appearance. If I had darker skin or features that they associated with a black person, they would not have said that around me. They did not say that around if anyone else who appeared black was in the room. You know, it was like I was safe, like I was light enough, I wasn't threatening to them.
So, it's understandable that Miriam didn't want to let the Samoan part of herself erode. By the way, if you're thinking that Sawamoa sounds familiar but can't quite place it, you might be more familiar with the recent Disney film adapting myths from that culture.
So I heard about Moana probably a year and a half ago, and I was so freaking excited. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be like the greatest thing ever. And then a month passes, and then I look back on it, and I'm like, wait a second. What if they misrepresent my entire culture? Like, what if this goes like Pocahontas? What if this is the Pocahontas of my culture? Like, this can't be a thing. But when I heard that The Rock was on all of that, I felt a little bit of relief, because his family is actually from my mom's island. And also, his family's from the village right next to my mom's.
If you're wondering what she thought of the movie, she estimates she's seen it around 7 times. So, yeah, she's a fan of everything except maybe the singing crab.
There's nothing about it in any culture, anywhere.
Which is apparently the only major part without any grounding in the mythology of the Pacific Islands.
But everything about the movie was very accurate. When I saw the movie with my mom, which was, I think, the 3rd or 4th time, she like started to cry, and I was like, Mom, oh my gosh, please don't cry. We're in a movie theater, we're in a public place. I don't know what to do. And she turns to me, and the first time she started crying was when the grandma came up. And the grandma looks like my grandma. And then the second time that she started crying was the like main Voyager boat. I think it was based off the exact same make of that boat. Because that, like, make of boat is very common on the islands, because that's how you fish, that's how you do everything. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. I was like, that's what my grandpa did. Like, he went out and he fished on the exact same boat, and everybody who's ever seen Moana can see what my grandpa did.
Stories are powerful things. Seeing yourself in stories can be even more powerful. If you're white, you might not realize that. Things have obviously gotten better over the past few decades, but every year media is predominantly white in its protagonists. Which, sure, if you look at the US, white people make up the largest percentage of the population, but it's a disproportionate ratio. That's why it can mean so much to someone when a film or book comes out where they feel represented. Whether it's as simple as reading a book where you see a character that has the same skin as you, or seeing a movie describing the overlooked half of your history. These are powerful things that can sometimes be hard to find.
But to see, like, the amount of, like, positive reviews from, like, everybody, it's empowering to me, because now I can talk about my culture and I can explain things. Like, whenever something happens in the movie, I can be like, that's that, because in my culture, this is what happens. And I can freely talk about it without feeling like I have to hold something back because I have to be the white person. I can be a colored person. I can be this, as what our culture calls, a half Samoan is an Afukese. So like, I'm an Afukese, right. And I'm proud to be an Afukese, and I can show you that I'm an Afukese by showing you my Samoan side through Moana and everything that's, and then I can show you my white side because my dad is a funny guy and his dad jokes are the greatest, and that's how I make friends with dad jokes, so thanks, dad.